From the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, November the 21st, 2023. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started right with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration. Brain droppings or noggin nuggets. Could be all of the above, you know. We're just going to leave that up to you. And here we go. Our eyes are placed in front because it's more important to look ahead than to look back. Whoa. True that. But when you're raising kids, having eyes in the back would be so helpful.
You're so weird.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the blogcast.
Twisted History.
This is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
For sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your Twisted History.
Okay.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, I suppose that possibility still remains. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1877, Thomas Edison announced his invention of the phonograph, a machine that can record and play sound. Unfortunately for him, there were no record labels back then, so there wasn't a whole lot of interest in the contraption yet. And on this day in 1959, disc jockey Alan Freed, who had popularized the term rock and roll and music of that style, was fired from WABC Radio in New York over allegations he had participated in the payola scandal. And he had. But he wasn't willing to sign a document admitting to it. And that is what got him fired.
You know, sometimes it just gets hard to smile through it when they ask you to bend down and grab your ankles.
Back last Friday, Rich Lowry had an op-ed that appeared in the New York Post that I've got to read this to you because this is a warning. It's a stark warning. He wrote, the old conventional wisdom was that the United States couldn't be too pro-Israel for fear of inflaming the Arab street. Well, the new conventional wisdom will have to be that we can't be too pro-Israel for fear of inflaming the Western street. The Arab street, a hoary cliche of commentary on the Middle East for decades, was a reference to public opinion in the Arab countries, with the strong implication that if we offended it, the result would be massive anti-Western demonstrations and perhaps violence. Well, here we are, with this dynamic playing out throughout the United States and other Western countries. We've offended the new Arab street with our own societies. In response, it's lashed out in mass protests, intimidation of Jews, anti-Semitic chants and graffiti, property damage, and anti-patriotic acts and sentiments. It's hardly the global intifada that speakers at these events call for, but it is significant agitation. Left-of-center political parties will take it seriously. And the Biden administration, hesitant to speak of anti-Semitism without reference to fashionable Islamophobia as well, has already been influenced by it. The Arab street in the West is not literally Arab, although Muslim immigrants and their children, along with foreign students, are clearly a large component. Woke young people, come by their anti-Israeli views via intersectional politics, along with traditional left-wing and anti-war activists, play a big role too. It makes for a noxious mix. The West's Arab street mobilized in the immediate aftermath of October 7th, before Israel even had the chance to mount any substantial response. It invaded against Israel on principle even after an unspeakable pogrom. Of course, things have only picked up from there. A week or so ago, more than 300,000 pro-Palestinian protesters marched in London, chanting for the elimination of Israel. That would be a notable crowd in an Arab capital, but it's especially remarkable in one of the greatest cities in the Western world. In a nice touch that, again, one would expect in a country in the Middle East, the protest march ended at the U.S. Embassy. A couple of days earlier, thousands of protesters shut down Midtown Manhattan. They vandalized a police cruiser, writing IDF KKK on it, and splattered fake blood on the New York Times building. They kicked and smashed windows in at a shut-down Grand Central Terminal. Unlike other mass movements, most famously the civil rights movement, the protesters don't seek to swathe themselves in American symbolism and ideals. Palestinian flags, not American flags, are the banners of these marchers. In Manhattan, they removed American flags from a lamppost, and they've vandalized war memorials in Europe. In some prominent cases, we've directly imported hatred of ourselves via the Middle East. At a large pro-Palestinian rally in Washington, D.C., the lawyer and activist Lamez Diq praised martyrdom and resistance and bellowed that the truth is the Western world is a lie. She comes from Nablus, and her worldview is about what you'd expect from someone from there. At MIT, Israeli and Jewish students say they were blocked from attending class by a pro-Palestinian protest at the school's main entrance. The protest violated the rules, but when the school ordered all protesters to leave the area or face suspension, the contingent of Jewish counter-protesters left, while the pro-Palestinians stayed. Were they suspended? No, apparently because many of them are foreign students. The president of MIT cited visa issues in not following through on the discipline. This is perverse. But we can never forget the extent to which we ourselves, through determined inculcation in our own schools, have made students from right here in the United States haters of Israel and the West. Altogether, we've created the conditions for the ongoing cataract of anti-Israel agitation, coupled with outright anti-Semitism and harassment of Jews that shows no sign of abating. Why settle for an Arab street abroad when you can have one right here at home? Again, that's from Rich Lowry. I see his columns just about everywhere. He has written for publications like Western Journal, and I'm trying to remember who else. But I featured his columns on a number of occasions in doing these blogcasts. And really, the foundation of all of this was set with our open borders. We let anybody and everybody in. Do you know, back in the early 20th century, when the main gateway to this country was Ellis Island in New York, they'd kick you out. They'd send you back if you were sick, if you had diseases. Today, we don't send anybody back. We let them in. We were letting them in through an open border during the height of COVID. So, what does that tell you about the respect that our elected officials have for this country? How can they have any respect for you or for me or for our Constitution when they don't respect this land enough to pay attention to who is coming in? We're letting everybody in. It's gotten so bad that even here in my own neighborhood, this was a good 10 years ago or more, I was out in my driveway washing my car, and this bushy-headed, dark-complected fella came up, started a conversation. He was a young fella, looked to be like maybe 17, 18 years old, somewhere in that neighborhood. And it was pretty clear in a rather short period of time that he was Muslim. And he started speaking in terms of Muslim rhetoric to me. And he even said, one day, this is going to be a Muslim country. Well, damn it, I'm an Air Force veteran from the Vietnam era. And I stood up and I looked him eye to eye. And I said, no, it's not. It'll never be a Muslim nation. Because we have a constitution that would prevent that from happening. And I suggest you stick your nose in the Constitution, because if you want to live in a Muslim country, you're not going to live here. Kit never spoke to me again. I never spoke to him again. I'm not harboring any hatred for Muslims. I think it's a truly messed up culture. I really do. When you listen to their rhetoric from their, particularly their militant, most militant speakers, it's frightening stuff. My skin curled every time George W. Bush got up to a podium and he said, Islam is a religion of peace. Maybe that's the way it was originally intended, but the way it's being carried out today, it is not. It has not been a religion of peace since, probably the early 1970s. Now, arguments could be made, I guess, that the Western world has pushed them into the stance that they take. Okay, maybe. But that really does need to be examined. The real culture war isn't gay pride or wokeness or any of this other bullcorn. The real culture war is between the Eastern world and the Western world. And there will be a flashpoint at some cultural intersection in the future. And I'm afraid it's the not too distant future where all of this is going to come to a head. And I think maybe the spark that lit it was October 7th. And make no mistake about it, in this particular instance, the Muslims are wrong. Hamas was wrong. Hamas has committed and has been committing ever since war crimes. Crimes against humanity. And they continue. And they will continue indefinitely unless we put a stop to it. And I think a place to start right now, a good place to start, would be to start rounding up and deporting militant Muslims. The fact that Representative Rashida Tlaib is still in our government, is still in Congress, that is a slap to our Constitution and our Western way of life. We must ramp up now. We must train ourselves, train each other for the forthcoming war between the Eastern world and Judeo-Christian culture. To say that Americans aren't happy with Joe Biden is kind of an understatement. His approval rating hit its lowest point of his presidency, according to a new NBC News poll. Yes, you heard that right, NBC. Huh. Democratic pollster Jeff Horwitz said Joe Biden is at a uniquely low point in his presidency. Here's how NBC reported it. President Joe Biden's approval rating has declined to the lowest level of his presidency, 40%, as strong majorities of all voters disapprove of his handling of foreign policy and the Israel-Hamas war, according to the latest national NBC News poll. What's more, the poll finds Biden behind former President Donald Trump for the first time in a hypothetical general election matchup, although the deficit is well within the poll's margin of error for a contest that's still more than 11 months away. That's a good point. And then again, we're still talking polls, right? Now, the erosion for Biden, again, we go back to the NBC News story here. The erosion for Biden is most pronounced among Democrats, a majority of whom believe Israel has gone too far in its military action in Gaza, and among voters ages 18 to 34, with a whopping 70% of them disapproving of Biden's handling of the war. Joe Biden is at a uniquely low point in his presidency, and a significant part of this, especially within the Biden coalition, is due to how Americans are viewing his foreign policy actions. Now, that's a direct quote from this Democratic pollster, Jeff Horwitz of Hart Research Associates, who conducted this particular survey with Republican pollster Bill McInturf of Public Opinion Strategies. Meanwhile, it's important to remember that Trump's poll numbers continue to rise. But again, these are just polls. Now, one of the reasons that Biden is such an inept president is because he's not really our president. And you need to understand this. Barack Obama and this cartel that he assembled before his own election back in 2008 is the real president here. All of the policies that were in place during the 8 miserable years that the Manchurian candidate was in the White House are in place now. Border wide open. kissing up to the Muslims, giving Israel a rough time. And, you know, when you have pinheaded idiots, granted, the woman is talented, but she's a complete mongoloid idiot when it comes to politics, and it's Barbara Streisand. And the more she opens her mouth worshiping people like Obama, she loves Obama. She loves him. If she knew what was really in his head regarding Jews, you would think she'd hate him, but she's too stupid to understand his hatred for the Western world. I mean, Obama's hatred is not just for the Jews. Obama's hatred is for anybody who's not black and anybody who's not Muslim. Well, he's not a practicing Muslim. No, he's not. Because how in the world do you infiltrate the enemy the way he has infiltrated us? By being honest. You don't. You can't. I said this back when he was elected. I said, congratulations, America. You just let in the Trojan horse. What did I just talk about in the first segment? Rich Lowry's op-ed about how the Arab street is now here in the United States. The Arab street is in Washington, D.C. It's in New York City. And it's spreading to other cities here in the United States. How did it get here? Our open borders. Who opened the borders? Barack Obama. Who's Barack Obama? He's Muslim number one. And you have to understand that what I'm saying here isn't Islamophobia. But Islamophobia is a convenient word for them to use against us when we criticize them. That's all I'm doing. I'm criticizing them. I do not hate Muslims. I don't. I know a few Muslims who are neighbors of mine, and they are very nice people. And I'll tell you this, they do not approve of this kind of behavior. They really don't. It shames them. But you have to start calling things by what they are. War is war. Hatred is hatred. Anti-Semitism is anti-Semitism, regardless of who practices it. And any parallels that are being drawn, and they are being drawn, but any parallels that are being drawn between the Nazi flag with the swastika, that red flag with the white circle and the black swastika in the middle, and the Palestinian flag, actually the Hamas flag, are very accurate parallels. And they must be drawn. You cannot allow wokeism to shut you up where you see and where you experience injustice and genocide. You must speak out. Because destruction comes to those who don't have the courage to speak out. I want to drop a name right now, and it's not going to mean anything to you. Javier Milei. It's spelled M-I-L-E-I. Some circles, depending on which language you speak, it could be pronounced Javier Milei. But he's an economist, a cable news fixture who was elected to the Argentine Congress, riding a wave of anti-socialist sentiment back in 2021. Well, he is now their new president. He was elected Sunday. And he's going to take office on December 10th. They do things quickly down there, I guess. Anyhow, Milei campaigned as a libertarian, a capitalist anti-socialist, leading his young political movement, Liberty Advances. That's the name of the movement, Liberty Advances. I like the name of that. And he led them against the long-standing Peronist socialist establishment. And as you probably know, Argentina over the last, oh, golly, 5, 6, 7 decades, maybe even longer, has been wrestling with a questionable economy, a monetary system that was a complete failure. And it's something that they brought upon themselves early, really, in the 20th century. So the arrival of a guy like this guy, Javier Milei, is interesting. As a Latin American libertarian, he also took socially conservative positions that don't align with the common understanding of mainstream libertarianism here in the United States. For instance, he opposes the legalization of abortion, and he's discouraging business dealings with communist countries, including one of Argentina's top trade partners right now, China. Now, the candidate representing the socialists, who's the current Minister of Economics, Sergio Massa, announced to his supporters before official election results had been published that he had called Milei to concede the presidency. Well, with 86.59% of the vote tallied at press time and published by Argentina's election authorities, Milei received 55.95% of the vote, compared to 44.04% for Sergio Massa. A double-digit lead made especially notable because Massa defeated Milei in the first round of voting on October 22nd. I'm sure there's going to be a fair share of analysis of this in the future, but for now, Milei's the boss. He's the new boss. And he's going to succeed Massa's boss, current president Alberto Fernandez, under whose leadership the country has gone through an unprecedented economic crisis. Same problems down there we have here. Skyrocketing inflation, joblessness. And then, of course, something that's really hard to fix is social anxiety. Now, Fernandez chose not to run for re-election. Probably a wise choice. And the presumed candidate expected to replace him. Current Vice President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner also chose not to run after being convicted of corruption in late 2022. Courts found her both guilty of engaging in corruption and covered by prosecutorial immunity laws. So the vice president, who's also served as both president and first lady, chose to abstain from entering the race. Probably a very wise choice on her part. Now, Massa delivered a speech at his campaign headquarters where he urged supporters to wish Milei luck and work to improve the lives of Argentines collectively. Very gracious of someone who lost. Not the sort of thing I would have expected to hear from a socialist. But speaking over some jeers in the crowd, Massa added, I did it convinced that the most important thing we have to leave Argentines is the message that coexistence, dialogue, and respect for peace before so much violence and disqualification is the best path that we can take. You know, just once I'd like to see one of these lefties actually embrace the idea of free enterprise. Free enterprise. Let people rise to the best they can be. And Fernandez wrote, "The people have expressed their will. Millions of Argentines voted and defined the destiny of the fatherland for the next 4 years. I am a man of democracy, and I don't value anything more than the popular will. I trust that as soon as tomorrow, we will begin to work with Javier Milei to guarantee an orderly transition." And it'd be very important right now. Pray for an orderly transition down there in Argentina. Milei's Liberty Advances Party. I like that name, Liberty Advances. But they first entered the Argentine Congress in 2021, giving Milei himself his first political experience and rising at the expense of both the socialist Peronists and the unpopular center-right establishment. The Peronists lost the Argentine Congress in 2021 for the first time since 1983. And he has for years condemned politicians as parasites and referred the nation's career politicians as a caste that lives at the expense of the average Argentine citizen. Sounds so familiar, doesn't it? That's why I'm saying, watch Argentina. Watch this man, Javier Milei. As an economist, He's focused his public rhetoric for years on the wealth-generating power of unfettered capitalism, condemning socialism as an impoverishing system, a system that allows for parasites in politics to live lavishly while most people suffer. Gee, aren't we starting to see some of that here in the USA? Now listen to this. To combat inflation and economic collapse, Milei has promised to dollarize the country. Make the U.S. dollar an official Argentine currency and eliminate the Argentine Central Bank. I like this guy, Milei, already. He famously appeared on television destroying a piñata version of the Argentine Central Bank to celebrate his birthday. What a terrific entrance. And then, listen to this. In an interview with Tucker Carlson in September, Milei reiterated his disgust with large government politics. Quoting him, he says, "The state does not create wealth, it only destroys it. The state cannot give anything because it doesn't produce anything, and when it wants to do so, it does so badly." Here again, he's speaking Americanese. Says, since they, the left-wing politicians, intend to live off of others without working, they're tireless in pursuing this because their leitmotif in life is to live off of others. So they never cede in this mechanism of appropriation of riches and money and the generation of income of others. So that battle has to be fought permanently. One cannot rest because when you rest, socialism advances. Man, run him for our president, for crying out loud. And then when asked to give advice to American former President Donald Trump, Milei said at the time, "From my humble position, I would say to Trump to redouble efforts from the same position. Don't give the socialists any respite, not even for a second." Yeah, I like this guy. Remember that name, Javier Milei. You may be screaming it in the future. Let's head on over to the comedy corner. You know, when they're good, we bring them back. So here's Clint Hall.
My name is Clint Hall. Actually, I want to make sure we get off on the right foot. So full disclosure, Clint is a nickname. It's a family name. My real name is Clinneth, C-L-E-N-N-E-T-H. Because my mother, Clarissa, and my father, Kenneth, thought it would be romantic for me to have to spell my name to everybody. I'm still better off than my brother Kenisa. Right. I do enjoy performing stand-up, but as it is right now, I do still have a day job as well. I am a case manager with the State of Indiana Food Stamp and Medicaid Office. What, Clint, you work in an office? We didn't see that coming. We thought you worked out of doors. With your hands. But I couldn't really help it, though. The whole time I was growing up, my mom did then the same job that I do now. And while everybody else was getting Legos and Tonka trucks, she'd be bringing home discontinued government forms for me to play with. Be filling those out with the kids in the neighborhood. Is there any reason you're not working at this time? I'm 7. What's wrong with you? I can't talk a lot about what I actually do at work because when my supervisor found out I was doing stand-up comedy, she told me so. She said, "Everything we do here is proprietary. Like they're afraid Kentucky's going to find out what we're doing. Steal all our food stamp business." work in a small office. There's eight of us in the office, and I am required to wear my photo ID at all times. I asked my supervisor why. She says, that's a security measure in case somebody gets in here who's not supposed to be. You'll know.
Make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
Tomorrow, G-Man.